Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks Covers Lower Decks. We are talking about episode 4, that is episode 4 of season 5 of Lower Decks, Farewell to Farms, as well as season 1, episode 4, Moist Vessel, from the 27th of August, 2020. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing all right, man. Those are some tongue twister titles there, Bob. Farewell to Farms and Moist Vessel.
Oh, fine. Just criticize my pronunciation to start the show. Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome, Bob. Always there for you.
Since you've opened with a criticism of me, let me open with a criticism of you. So last week we were talking about there's apparently a Star Trek comedy series in development that Tawny Newsom is writing for. And you, sir, incorrectly said that it was animated. And I agreed with you, but then I was looking up about it, and we don't know much, but apparently it's supposed to be a live action. They're marketing it as the first live action Star Trek comedy.
Okay, that's going to be interesting. I don't know how I feel about that, Bob. What are your thoughts?
I think I said this last week, but just to reiterate, better than Starfleet Academy, surely. That's my main thought, right?
With it being live action, we've never seen the comedy in live action before. And the cartoon animation, though, gives them more freedom to do stuff. So I'm wondering if they're going to be restricted doing the live action.
Yeah, it is interesting. Apparently, it's supposed to be set early 25th century, and that way they can have characters from Lower Decks or Picard show up. They explicitly say this. In one sense, we have seen some live Star Trek comedy because we saw the crossover episode between Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds.
True.
But that's, you're right, that's hardly the whole series, right?
You look at some of the comedy they pull off in the animated cartoon, and you're seeing there's just stuff you could never do in live action or do well with the TV budget.
Although it seems like the idea is to have it be much more a sitcom setup of on the resort planet, like Cheers or Parks and Rec or The Office, right? Guest stars are coming to the place. They're not going out to the guest stars, if that makes sense.
Like the Love Boat.
Or like the Love Boat, but without the Love Boat, goes to different ports. This will not go to different ports.
We can have Beverly Crusher show up at the resort.
We could. It does sound like Tawny Newsom is just writing. That's the voice actress for Mariner, for folks who don't know. It does sound like she's just writing for Starfleet Academy. And for this resort show, it doesn't necessarily sound like she'll be in front of the camera. Although, given that they tease Lower Deck stuff, presumably she would show up as Mariner at some point then.
For sure. They would not leave that out.
It also does raise an interesting question, just how many of the voice actors from Lower Decks could play their characters in live action? I don't really know. I haven't looked at the voice cast and seen what they look like, seen how easy or difficult it would be to transform them into makeup into the people they're playing.
Yeah, because Tawny Newsom really does look like Mariner, and the guy who plays Boimler looks just like him too.
Yeah, yeah. Is that true of some of the other characters?
Oh, I have no idea. We have to find out, man. That would be kind of cool, though, to have the whole cast live action.
Yeah.
I wonder what Shaq's voice actor looks like.
Yeah, I wonder that, too. And then, obviously, doing Dr. Tiana and a very relevant character for today, the bird counselor, that would be difficult to do in live action.
That's very true. I can't imagine what the bird... Would you do animatronics, Bob, or do you think they do it CGI if they were doing...
I think you, given that it's TV budget, I would think that it pretty much has to be CGI, but maybe I'm wrong. It's not a subject I know a lot about.
No.
Looking at the guy who plays Shax, I could see it.
I could totally see it. They could make it happen. Definitely.
Yeah.
There's one where he's not wearing his glasses. He got his hair cut short. Yeah, you could totally just give him a mustache and he could pull it off.
Maybe a mustache and a muscle shirt.
Oh, yeah. So let's drop into this episode of what happened on Farewell to Farms.
Yeah, Matt, were you surprised by the alternate opening credits
for
Lower Decks this week?
I really was, because I thought at first we may be getting one of those episodes where it was going to center on, not the main crew and just sort of they were doing more of an experimental type thing.
And it sort of did. It was closer to that in some ways than being a normal episode, although it did have the B plot.
Correct, yes. And then the title lettering of lower credits, the way it was imposed against the way Kronos looks, it reminded me of Star Wars, I guess, because it had that Tatooine look too.
I wasn't thinking like that, but that makes total sense.
No.
I did want to fact check you on something else. My impression when I was watching it was that it was not Kronos, that it was some Klingon agricultural colony world.
Oh,
but
gotcha.
Then I looked it up. I looked it up to correct you. And I was, that's right. I'm wrong.
See, Bob, sometimes planets are so big that they have different fauna and stuff around them.
And Matt, but also sometimes the Klingon Empire is so big that not all Klingons live on the homeworld.
Not every planet is just snow or just desert. Sometimes there's more to it.
Matt, it's more glorious to have your farms on a subjugated world than on your homeworld.
We get every man's perspective of the Klingon culture. Did you like that? Would you want to live there?
Yes, I liked it. No, I wouldn't want to live there.
Okay. I felt like I would probably want to visit there maybe like on vacation just for fun, just to see what it's like. I would totally not live there.
Matt wants to get sent to an agricultural work farm on Quonos for a couple months.
No, I want to go watch people work on the farm and like them give me tours of it.
What was that with Paris Hilton back in the day where she gets sent to the farm?
Simple Life.
The Simple Life, yes. Well, Matt, we have a couple of returning Klingon characters, speaking of.
Yes, we do, Bob. We have General Corrin, which goes all the way back to season one. And we just covered him in our coverage of season one. So it's pretty neat to see a character.
Was it episode two?
Correct, yes.
I think it was episode two.
Yeah,
so listeners are remember General Corrin, whereas you otherwise might. And then we also have Ma, who I think first shows up in the season two finale and then shows up in a couple season four episodes as well.
Right. And the famous thing General Corrin did was he spit blood wine all over Boimler at the beginning of that episode. That's
for which I'm eternally grateful.
Correct. Yeah, that was Bob's thing.
Yeah. Well, we did get one of my favorite lines about Klingons this episode, which was what crawled up her boob window and died.
Yeah, I feel like anytime I think of boob window, I think of Power Girl. Oh, yeah, the Klingon women usually wear those outfits as well.
We have a Mariner making cracks about boob windows, but we also have a subplot with Migli Amu where we get a lot of backstory info we probably didn't need or didn't want about Migli Amu and his people. But, Matt, we have Migli Amu. We have our bird counselor. He's molting. He's losing feathers. Did that make you sympathize more, or did you just find it visually disgusting?
I sympathize with Migli Amu, Bob, because it's probably like my hair falling out. I like to blame it on stress, but I do know it was genetic, but I like to tell children it was from them stressing me out.
Okay, so it's bald solidarity. I get it. I get it. Does the fact that I think I'm right in saying this, laugh at me if I'm not, birds molt their feathers, but then they grow new feathers, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. I think it's almost like they're shedding skin.
Yeah. So does that make you a little jealous then, since, you know, you can't regrow your feathers, as it were? Matt, do you have an observation about the bird food in this episode?
Yes. So what's interesting is they go all the way back again to season one, because Boimler's favorite dish from the replicator that he could get with the senior card that is in the episode we're going to cover later today was macaroni and cheese with a crust on top. And that is what they feed the little bird people, who then spit it out because they dislike it because they have no taste.
Yes.
Which we quickly learn by the end of the episode. So,
yeah. Another trope that we see carry from season one to season four is the trope of Boimler getting attacked by large animals. In this case, a targ. And so we do have the great line of Mariner, even better than the line about the boob window, is her yelling at the general, not her general, but the villainous general. Hire a targ groomer, dude. You're clearly just fucking with us.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, and then the Klingon drops an F-bomb immediately after that. That's got to be the first time we've heard a Klingon cuss.
Unless it happened on the show before.
Right. But I'm telling you, that's the only time I've ever heard a Klingon use the F-word. It's fascinating to me. Bob, so have you noticed the growth on Boimler's face?
I have. It's him getting more the better version of him from the alternate universe, and I support it.
Yes, Bob, the growth on his face represents the growth of his character.
I've always said this, Matt.
He's going to be a starship captain by the end of all this. I can guarantee it.
Did you catch the General Martog reference?
I did not, Bob. What was the General Martog reference? I completely missed it.
Oh, I think it was either Ma'a or his brother positively refers to Martog at the end of the episode. I think it's Ma'a. He's, oh yeah, this is how Martog started out.
Oh yeah, okay. That went completely over my head. Yeah. Some of these quips are quick in the show, Bob. You have to really pay attention. One of my favorites, though, is Migli Amu. He is a chef of the mind.
Yes.
You should use that in your tutoring and teaching, Bob.
But I don't want to be a shrink, Matt. I'm very pointedly not trying to be a therapist to these children.
But Bob, you cook their minds so they work better.
My union rep asked me if I did anything different in election week, and I was like, no, what am I going to tell them?
All right, Bob. Well, that goes for my, let's move on to character of the week. My character of the week goes to Migli Amu because he had a substantial B plot. And this is a highlight episode for him.
I'm really shocked that you like Migliamu in a spotlight episode so much. I was expecting that you would maybe be more hostile to it.
Migliamu's grown on me, Bob. I think because you exposed me to the animated series from the 70s Star Trek, which...
So you're saying you vastly prefer Migliamu as a bird person to the characters we meet as bird people in the original animated series?
Exactly. Because the one in the 70s, Bob, it was so cheesy. But now it's all, they've taken it and they've made something out of it that's better. They've given
that. Wait till we get to the 70s animated series episode where a different bird person, different species, but exact same design, leads a jihad.
Okay. I look forward to that, Bob. I really do.
You won't like it. I'm shocked at the positivity from Migliamu. The counterpoint, I guess, would be my character of the week. I'm going to give it to Mariner for summing up my thoughts on foodies when she says to Boimler, talking about the two food critics that Migliamu reveres, "What are you talking about? Wait, I don't care."
And yeah.
That's pretty much always my response whenever a foodie says anything.
Bob, is taste not so subjective that it's really pointless to have, like, food critiques?
I don't think taste is subjective, or at least I think people way, way overrate that it's subjective. If anything, I think the problem with food critics is that they're too subjective because they then write these long personal essays about their experience with the food.
Well, they got to get a word count. Like, I mean, they got to have so many
brother,
words.
I don't care. Well, and it's partially their editor's fault for putting word counts on them, but it's, is the restaurant good or not? I don't need to know about the emotional or the sociocultural background. Does it taste good? Yes or no? If yes, give me a little sense of how it tastes, and then I'll try it. Like that. So that's my counter to you, is that no, food criticism is in fact way too subjective already.
Bob, let's broaden my palate a little more by going back to season one to talk about Moist Vessel.
Well, Matt, we can broaden your palate, but we sure can't broaden your transition skills because they're already on point, my brother.
Yeah, because it made perfectly logical sense, Bob. Keep going.
Man, I praise you, and then you just undermine it. You just undermine it. You won't even accept praise from
me. I can't take the praise, Bob. I need the criticism. Come on now.
I think you need to go to a chef of the mind so that you can learn to appreciate praise, Matt. That's what I'm taking from this exchange.
Sure.
So episode 4, season 1, Moist Vessel. Before we actually talk about it, I did want to raise something slightly off topic that I just learned. Matt, did you know that in 2020, around about the time this was premiering, Star Trek Lower Decks season 1 was premiering, there was a plan to do an animated comedy X-Files spinoff called X-Files Albuquerque?
No, I did not know this. When did this come up?
The plan was in 2020, and then by 2023, they said they weren't doing it.
Oh, okay.
They said in 2023, Ryan Coogler, the guy who directed Black Panther, Black Panther 2, and Creed, they were saying he might do an X-Files reboot with new characters taking over from Mulder and Scully, presumably more diverse characters.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still on track to happen. I think Ryan Coogler has a horror movie coming out that looks pretty good. I forget the name of it, but I saw the trailer in front of Joker 2, and it looks pretty good. It's coming out, I think, in March of next year. So I wonder if he just got all of his horror energies done in that movie instead of doing the X-Files reboot. But maybe we'll get an X-Files reboot still. But yeah, before the current plans, they said animated comedy. So I assume they just heard about Lower Decks and they're like, oh, we could do that with X-Files.
Yeah, no, they just picked a place or like, let's put that in front of it. It's like all a day.
Well, I mean, I've been watching some X-Files with my boy, which is how this came up. And the two places that are most prominent in the X-Files, I would say, I mean, besides DC, obviously, because that's where the FBI is headquartered, are the Pacific Northwest and the Desert Southwest. They go to both all the time. It actually does make sense. There's also the point, I don't know if he would have been involved in it at all, but it's not a coincidence that the guy who ran Breaking Bad and ran Better Call Saul got his start as an X-Files writer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a synopsis for it on IMDb that says, an office full of misfit agents who investigate the X-Files cases too wacky, ridiculous, or downright dopey for Mulder and Scully to bother with.
Oh, interesting. So would it have been like set back in the 90s, perhaps?
That's what I'm wondering. And this says, and I'm reading it, says Carter confirmed that it's not moving forward.
They said they weren't going to do it. Sorry about that tangent, Matt. So, Moist Vessel, we meet a character here, the Tellarite Captain Durango. He has shown up, I think, I think it was the season three finale where they have all of the California class ships.
Right, yeah.
So Durango and his ship are there, but basically they haven't used Durango in a substantive way ever since this episode. Does that surprise you at all?
Not really. I haven't seen him. I like remember his face just because he has that like distinct beard thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really remember much about him other than this episode.
Nice. Well, this episode is also the source of the immortal scene of Freeman yelling at Mariner for her sarcastic Vulcan salute. That made me very happy. That's one of my favorite scenes in the whole show.
This first season Mariner stuff is just some of her better stuff from the series.
Yeah, they do have to soften her as the show goes on.
All right, and you also have other characters kind of taking the lead in the future seasons.
We also have the interesting subplot or B-plot in this episode where Tindy is trying to help this lieutenant ascend, right? Which is, there's a very interesting description of ascension. It reminds me of the act of subliming in Banks' series of novels, The Culture. But you have a really funny description that Tindy gives of ascending, and it's studying so hard for the test that you become the test.
I've read one Ian Banks novel, Bob, that you recommended. It was pretty good. It was The Player of Games, I believe.
That's the second one. Mm-hmm. The ascension stuff more comes up at the end of the series, and it's stuff that a whole civilization does rather than an individual.
Interesting. And all his books are from the 80s. I read was from 88.
He starts writing the series in the late 80s, but he does it periodically through the 90s, through the aughts, and then I think the last one is 2012, and he died around.
Yeah, all I remember is you telling me about it when you were reading them, about the talking ships.
Yeah, the talking ships are great. It really is real AI, folks, not the text-complete crap that we're calling AI.
But it finishes my sentences, Bob.
Matt, can you remember back to 2020, and were you surprised back then about the revelation of how nasty the holodeck waste filters are and what they're really there to catch?
It's pretty disgusting, Bob, but I always had that idea. That's what was going down in those holodecks.
I assume that was a joke the writers got from Star Trek shitposting.
Straight from the mouth of babes.
Did you get a little bit of Tom Sawyer vibes off Mariner in this episode, her turning the carbon filter cleaning into a betting game?
Just shifting everything to make it where it's more fun for her. Very Tom Sawyer.
Were you surprised in her promotion that she got to skip Lieutenant JG? She just went straight to full lieutenant.
Yeah, you ever failed your way to something better, Bob?
No, I just fail.
I haven't really either. I've heard of people that have, and I know people that have, but geez, it's annoying.
Or what you're saying is that you're Boimler just fuming at Mariner's unearned success.
Exactly, yes. That's how I'm usually the Boimler in this situation. And I will go out of my way to emulate what they did, and I'll end up like Boimler and spilling coffee all over Ransom's crotch.
Well, the last time Matt visited me in Seattle, he came into my apartment in a basement with a stoner, and it was just like, damn, bitch, you live like this? But if Matt visits me in Seattle, and he sees my weird setup that I have, and he walks around, and he's, ah, man, damn, Bob, you live like this? And you'll be like, Boimler, how did you get this?
I'm going to have to come back to Seattle, Bob. Going to have to come back.
Yeah.
To live, to see your mansion.
To see my manse, man. A lot of great Mariner-Freeman interactions to this. I really do like Mariner telling Freeman, I get what you're doing and it's sick. That was very funny.
So, Bob, Tindy acts different in this episode.
Yeah, I'm going to go so far as to say she's disturbingly psychotic in this episode. Yeah. Does that seem too extreme? I feel like it's not too extreme.
She seems very anxious, and maybe it's toned down somewhat in future seasons. I just don't remember her being this, like, crazy.
Well, they do sort of play it as she learns a lesson from this episode, but my God, she's psychotically a people pleaser in this one.
Had this character remained through the rest of the seasons like that, it would have been off. I would have
really glad they took it down a notch. Well, Matt, speaking of characters, we sort of meet a new character because our lieutenant, he's ascending, and then we find out, first of all, the ascension burns, and then we see some great Bird of the Galaxy imagery. And then we see a koala imagery, and our ascending lieutenant is yelling, what does the koala know? Why is she always smiling?
Who says ascension doesn't have to hurt, Bob? It makes me feel much better about Wesley having to go through it to become a traveler.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's good. At least I know that Wesley has suffered.
Yes.
That makes me happy.
And that koala is a trip, man. The minute I saw that koala pop back up, I was like, oh, that's okay. Now I remember where it started, because we see it throughout the rest of the series.
Koalas, mac and cheese.
Yeah.
What was the other motif we picked out from these two episodes?
Just characters in general. Some of the same characters we've seen.
Well, Matt, so for the first episode, you said Migliamoo and I said Mariner. for this episode, who's your character of the episode?
I'm going to go with Ransom Bob because he took that pot of coffee to the groin during a red alert, which is hilarious.
It is funny, but I'm a little disturbed by how strong your sympathetic identification with it is.
Yeah, it's really, really funny, though.
Well, I'm going to give it to Freeman for myself this episode. She's got a lot of great lines. I particularly love her just very sternly yelling at Mariner, "You did not just call me Carol."
That's
great. All right. Well, this has been Lower Decks. Still a joy to go back through this. Is episode 5 Starbase 80 question mark? Is that what we have?
I believe so. Yes, that's correct.
All right. Well, listeners, join us next week for Starbase 80 question mark question mark. And this has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt at the Southland. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening.